If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, and thank you, John Coltrane, for My Favorite Things. And welcome to this week's National International Roundtable, the fastest growing talk show on the internet of its kind anywhere. Excuse me for a minute while I get all of my notes and things here. This hosted by the municipal court judge Thad Wilson and Arif Khatib, and presented by the Multi-Ethnic Sports Hall of Fame, a nonprofit organization based in the USA. The Hall of Fame was established in 2000 to broaden the public understanding of ethnic history and the role of diversity and cultural tolerance in the growth of professional sports. We induct athletes no matter their race. We've presented ceremonies in New York, Seattle, Puerto Rico, Ethiopia, Los Angeles, Nairobi, Kenya, Virgin Islands, Houston, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, San Francisco Bay, and Palm Springs. We are not trained journalists, and therefore we concentrate on the format of this show, which is to teach and inspire. Although we are a sports hall of fame, we'll be discussing many topics on this show, which will feature compelling guests that we know will enlighten, inform, empower, and educate listeners around the globe, because it's already doing that. You get information on this show you're not likely to find anywhere else. Our show is not your ordinary learning experience, and it's not a reality show. We give you the opportunity to listen to notable guests that will educate our listeners on a wide variety of topics. By listening to this show, you are dedicating yourself to a day of knowledge and personal growth. And each week, our guests will validate our promise. The show is archived 1 hour after the live broadcast today and can be listened to anytime on your computer. We cannot accept calls, but you may send us questions or comments to afrosportshall.com. We want you to call 5 friends right now and tell them the National Roundtable is on the air again. We now have hundreds of thousands of listeners worldwide, and those who said cannot be done should not interrupt those who are doing it. Your Honor, are you there with me today?
I'm absolutely here, Mr. Rick. And how are you today, sir?
I'm doing just absolutely wonderful.
After
again?
We had that week break and had a great show from Denise. We're back.
Yeah, I want to let our audience know that in the event that there are some interruptions today, they're having some extreme weather on the East Coast. And if there are any interruptions, we will do the best we can to get it back on air. We have one of the best engineers anywhere, and she'll
Absolutely.
Get us back on air. If we can be on air, she'll get us on. So I just want to let our listeners know, if we leave you for a moment, we'll try to come right back on again, so stick around. And, Your Honor, we're in the middle of a series on the Black Canadians and their migrations north.
Yes.
And today, we're going to take it a step further, as we told them last week. And so, I know that you're raring to go.
Absolutely. This is a very interesting topic because it's not talked about much here in the United States, for sure. There's a lot to learn from what happened during that time when all the Afro-Americans migrated in that direction. And so we want to find out more about that and try to pin it down as to when and where and how. So I think we'll be able to do that with this particular guest. I think she has a handle on this stuff. Don't you think so?
Absolutely. We had a lot of response from last week's show. There was really about the Colored Hockey
yes.
League. That really messed them up. But wait until they hear the show today. We have a person on the show today that will have a more intimate knowledge of that because her dad was a tremendous hockey player in Canada. And let's get started right now.
Go right ahead.
Today, as we indicated, we will be the second part of a three-part series on African-American migration to Canada. And we have a guest today that we know that is you're going to be delighted to hear. So are we. Bernice Carnegie is the co-founder of the Herbert H. Carnegie Future Aces Foundation and served as the executive director for 17 years. Bernice is the daughter of Canadian icon Herbert Carnegie, former hockey player and the creator of the Future Aces philosophy. Bernice watched her father transform his challenges with racism into positive action. She continued to promote the Future Aces credo, which has become a tool of guidance to hundreds of schools to enhance safe schools programs and encourage more confident, caring, responsible, respectful behavior in youth. While working by her father's side for more than 35 years, Bernice caught the bug. She remains constant and passionate about sharing her father's compelling story, inspiring and encouraging thousands of people to make more positive lifestyle choices. During her workshops and presentations, she takes to her audiences through a historical journey outlined in Dr. Carnegie's famous hockey contributions and how he overcame racial adversity in more sports, in both sports and life. Bernice revealed what she learned from her father's challenges and how we all can be more compassionate, caring, and responsible in our personal choices and find proactive solutions in making our world a better place for all. Bernice had varied backgrounds in finance, business, education that allows her to adapt her presentation for corporations, community organizations, and youth. Her current pet project is conducting workshops for police services, helping officers to take a more positive approach in executing daily routines. From her parents' lead, she took to heart the importance of being proactive and giving back to society. Bernice has been recognized for her efforts, receiving numerous awards, some of which include Public Education Hero Award, Volunteers Award of Distinction, Planet Africa Development Award, Urban Hero Award Education, Black Business and Professional Association Women of Honor Award, National Ethics Presses and Media Council of Canada Humanities Community Service Award, and Queen Diamond Jubilee Medal. Bernice has been blessed with having nurtured three children, now adults, who remain a constant joy in her life. Her teenage granddaughter continues to follow the family tradition of playing hockey. Bernice will always be proud to be a mother, grandmother, and catalyst for possible change. Bernice, my friend, welcome to the National and International Roundtable.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here this evening and to have an opportunity to interact with you and Judge Wilson.
Well, we are as delighted as you are, and by the time this show is over, our audience will be delighted that they tuned in, because we're going to have a good time here today. And having said that, let me tell you that we have a relaxed format, Bernice, and that we're not combative. We asked a question and give you an opportunity to fully express yourself. And we want you to relax and feel like maybe you're in the living room and just talking to some friends and inspiring some young people as we go along the way. Speaking of inspiring, I ask the first question each week. And my question, again, as the listeners know by now, is pretty much the same, in that for our young people who are listening, or their parents or grandparents, we want to inspire young people by setting goals and reaching those goals. So I start with you, going back when you were a middle school or high school or whatever period of time that you began to set goals. What were those goals? When were you, or at what age were you, if you can remember, and how did you achieve them?
Well, that's a loaded question, because when I was in school, I was one of those people that struggled very much. It took a lot of effort for me to find my way through that system, to the point that they would often take me out of class because I couldn't speak properly, so I went for speech therapy. So my goal was, can I get to school every day? Can I get my homework done? And can I make it through? And it was a different time and place back then. I was the only black student in my classes from kindergarten through to the end of high school. And there was no support system in terms of anybody that really understood what my possible thoughts and feelings were. And when I got into high school, then I was probably the first black person that many of those high school students ever had met before. I was the first experience for them. And so the school part of it was always hard, but I did participate. I was in track and field and many of the athletic programs, and I became the president of the Girls Athletic Association and things like that. And that's what kind of held me together. So I didn't really come into my own until I finished high school and went into business college. And at that moment, my life started to change. I convinced my parents that I should go on. I'd actually gotten a job. I had gone out and gotten a job as a bank teller, and I came home and I said, well, Mom and Dad, you know what? I know you don't know this, but I went and I got a job, and they accepted me as a bank teller, but I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good because I really don't have any skills. And I said, will you send me to business college? And my father kind of bucked at it, and he said, well, maybe you should be going off and trying to figure out what you want to do for the year. But my mother was very determined and stuck up for me. And she said, now, Herb, Bernice wants to go and get further education now. We should honor that she wants to do it now, because maybe later that's not going to happen. So that was a changing point. So for young people, when you think you can't do it, I'm saying you should stick with it, because it can change your life when you find out that there are other skill sets that you may be able to call upon that will make a difference in your life. And taking that step into business college changed everything for me.
Joanna?
That is extremely inspiring, Ms. Carnegie. I love that story, because I'm sure the other grandparents who are dealing with their grandchildren now who probably are experiencing some of the same things, and the fact that you went ahead and took that experience and moved it forward to where you are now is certainly something that's great in my mind. Let me ask you, you were talking about the high school. Where were you in high school at? Where did you go?
Well, we were raised just north of Toronto in the suburbs of North York, then called Willowdale, and it was predominantly an all-white community. There were a few black people and a few other people of non-white origin in the community, and they had the same issues, as in if they were Japanese, the only Japanese family, or the only, you know, Chinese family, or the only, and it kind of went like that. So it was an unusual situation in that our socialization was a little different than if you were with people who were like you.
But
it was an exercise in learning to understand others, to be respectful of others, and to try to have them feel that way about you. And so everything was fine until the dating scene started.
And how did that go?
Well, you know, I don't think everybody appreciated mixing, you know, when it came to dating. And and for some, it was a little nerve-wracking. For me, I was dating young men from all over the world who came to Canada to get their education. Some of the young men were from the West Indies. Some of them were from Africa. And clearly, my friends in high school really didn't know very much about what I did socially because they weren't inviting me to their parties. And it was, you know, they saw me at school and everything was fine. And they, you know, generally I had a very pleasant time at school, but I wasn't always accepted socially.
Well, I want our listeners to know that Bernice is a grandmother. So what era are we speaking of, Bernice?
Well, I'm 68 years old.
All right.
Okay. So that kind of puts a little senior citizens in this act, eh?
Well, now, Bernice, your grandparents, I believe.
I am.
You know,
I have this incredible granddaughter. Her name is Kyla. She's 17 years old now, and in her last year of high school, she just got accepted into the college of her choice, and she's very excited.
And so is Grandma.
I am excited for her.
Absolutely. You sent me some information sometime before, several years ago, I believe, and I found it very interesting in that when the migration of Europe folks went into Canada. I think it started with your grandparents. How long ago was that? And where'd you come from? Where'd they come from?
Well, my father's parents came from Jamaica, and they came in 1911, and my grandparents on my mother's side were from the United States and came in 1912.
So they've been there for about 100
years. More than 100 years.
Over 100 years.
Over 100 years. Our grandparents decided that this was the country that would give us the most opportunity. And I have to say I'm very grateful that they made that choice.
I'm sure. Now, also, your great-grandfather, I believe, was a businessman back in Chicago. So, you know, what about that? You know, what can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, my great-grandfather was born into slavery in Kentucky and became a free man and owned a hotel in Chicago at the time of the Chicago fire in 1871. And I have two plates that were saved from his hotel. Then his children, my grandmother and the man that she married, my grandfather, Nathan Redmond, came to Canada, as I said, 100 years ago, and he was one of the few black men in Canada in Toronto at that time that owned his own business. A wonderful businessman. He had a haulage business, had 12 trucks, and he was part of developing the landscape of Toronto. And he built his own house in Toronto, baked the bricks three at a time, and put that house together. That house is still standing.
How's that for some history, Your Honor?
That is fantastic.
Great-grandfather owned a hotel in Chicago in 1870s.
Wow. That's fantastic. Did any of your relatives or close friends come directly from slavery to Canada?
I don't think they came from slavery to Canada. There was a step in between. But I really am looking forward to studying the records in Kentucky because I understand their records there are well kept, and I might find more about who the mother, who my great-grandmother might have been, because my great-grandfather was actually the product of the slave master and the slave.
Wow.
incredible story.
Now, of course, your father played hockey there in Canada and so forth. When did he start playing hockey there in Canada?
Well, my father was born in 1919 and was raised in North York. And at that time, they didn't even have arenas that had covers over them. He started his hockey on the ponds. There were many ponds because there were lots of open spaces in North York at that time. And the road that they lived on was basically a dirt road for a long time. So my father started his hockey career by slipping his shoes into the skates of his brother to try to learn to skate. So he and my uncle Ozzie were the hockey players that worked together to try to hone their skills, not only in hockey, but they were also excellent golfers. My father, as a golfer, actually won 16 championships and has 2 Canadian national titles.
You would not believe the history. I can say that I was very pleased to induct her dad into our Hall of Fame in New York. I think it was 2003, 2004, 2005, somewhere in the neighborhood of that. At that time, I was actually astounded and amazed at how popular he was in Canada. And let me give you an example. A couple of days before the event, I got a phone call from the Canadian broadcast system, which is the biggest over there. And they asked if they could send a camera crew to record his induction. And I agreed, yes, that'd be fine. And what hotels and so forth, that we'd like to interview him before. Can we do that? Yes, you can. But the next day, I received another phone call from a Good Morning Canada. And they want to know if we could bring an extra crew to film him for Good Morning Canada. I said,
wow.
Yes, you can. But I did put a condition on that one. And we laughed about it. The condition would be that we were developing a film, the Hall of Fame was developing a film called Because They Believe, that is now being edited after about 3 years of struggling financially to get it in a position. I asked them if they would allow me to interview Dr. Carnegie, and they would use their production crew to record it. And they said, yes, no problem. We did that after we inducted him, and Bernice will remember that, in Harlem. And then that they sent that back over to me from Canada with the release and the rights to use it. But that gives you an idea how popular was in Canada, and Bernice will tell more about that a little later on, because she sends me things all the time for the last several years about something that's happening to him, something's happening here, something's happening here. Bernice, your father was an icon in hockey, and he had some great, great stories about his attempt to become a member of the National Hockey League. Tell us a little something about that, will you?
Well, times were different, obviously. My father was part of hockey history in that there were 3 black men that played on one line on all-white hockey teams. And so obviously they were noticeable. And it wasn't until later that I realized the impact that they made. That was my uncle Ozzie Carnegie, my father Herb, and Manny McIntyre. And I now have the records or the articles. More than 3,000 articles have been written about my father, and I now have articles that showed their history in the early days. And the titles, the headlines of the newspapers were quite colorful. They said things like the brown bombers and the dark destroyers, the ink spots, husky raiders. you name it. And, of course, some of those referred to some of the people at the time, you know, the boxer and the singers and whatnot. But what's so interesting is that when I actually started to read the newspapers, they just really were so unique that they completely, and so talented that they razzle-dazzled those crowds and really put in a performance that was unbelievable. So it is sad, it's very sad that their talent was not utilized to its highest degree to reach the NHL. And my father was voted most valuable player 3 years in a row on his teams. And one of the things that sticks out for me is knowing that other team members at that time were invited to try out for the NHL, and they didn't give my father the opportunity. So he did get a letter from New York Rangers, and they asked him to be part of the farm team. And in doing so, they also said, well, we'll have to cut your pay. So, you know, my father had a home and three children at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he couldn't take it as a bona fide offer to be part of the organization when they were degrading the real skill that he had. Racism, as far as I'm concerned, is clear when you tell someone that they're the best and yet you don't put them with the best. You put other people with lesser records in their place and they want to take your salary away too. I tell this story very often to our young people because I know that they can do a better job of what some of our forefathers did, that it's up to them to really provide that opportunity and to see that every individual is important and should be valued for what they can bring to the table.
Your Honor?
Absolutely. Now, the team that he was playing for, it was a professional team, though, since he was receiving pay, right?
Yeah, that's how he supported us. It was the team just below the NHL, and yes, they were paid for their services. He would be gone 8 months of the year, and then because he played in the Quebec League, and then he would come back in the off season to be at home with the rest of the family. And I know sometimes people think, well, how could we keep a family together that way? But I learned that my mom and dad actually wrote love letters every day. And somehow I never felt like my father was away. Maybe I was too young to understand. I was too young to understand what he did for a living. I was too young to understand a lot of things, but the one thing I did understand is that my father seemed to be there when I needed him, and I had a lot of respect for what my mother was able to do when my father wasn't there.
You know, Your Honor, I've had a number of conversations with her dad. He was a remarkable in many ways, and one way that impressed me was that he did not hold any grudges against those who failed to bring him up to the National Hockey League. Certainly he wanted to go. He made it clear. But he began to think of other paths, and I think that may be why, I just couldn't understand how he would do it, but that may be at about the time, Bernice, that he established the foundation. Is it about that time when he realized he wasn't going to be in the National Hockey League, or did it happen before that?
It actually happened after. He hung up his skates. And that year, my brother was on a hockey team, and the coach died. And they came to my father and asked if he would coach the team. And he took over that team, and then He said that he was a terrible coach. He was fresh off the hockey circuit, and his head was all wound around winning. And there were times that he didn't put boys out, and he said sometimes they were crying and whatnot. And he said if he had understood back then, he would have fired himself. But what he did end up doing was establishing the first registered hockey school in Canada in 1954, and he called it Future Aces, the same name that he gave that team that he took over. And the concept of Future Aces was future, always striving, aces to be the best individuals that we can be. And at the hockey school, he introduced a credo that he wrote the next year called Future Aces, and it had 12 statements on it, and each statement started with, I will. And he wrote it from a personal perspective because he understood that people weren't going to be running around opening doors of opportunity for him. And so he understood it was all about, what am I going to do to change the way things are? And this was his attempt to have something in his life where he would get up saying, you know, I need to start my day with a positive attitude. And so the creed speaks to the word aces. And it started.
Bernice, if you can, I know you may not remember, but if you have it in front of you, I think our listeners would appreciate it and can certainly be inspired and learn from it. Not just kids, the Future Aces Creed that he wrote in 1956. Do you have that in front of you? If you're not, I do. I'll read it.
I do have it.
Please read that, because I think it's astounding at what he did and reaching the I will, as you talk about, and each one of them leading the I will, because our listening audience can benefit from this. Please read that.
Okay. So under the A of ACES, he wrote, I will develop a positive attitude toward all people and toward my work. I will develop my talents and ability in order that I may be helpful to society. I will take action with integrity. I will take initiative to achieve my goals with honest and sincere effort. And so in listening to my father speak those many years ago, mm-hmm. each one of those values under the A were important to him in terms of getting his day started. And under the C, he wrote, I will cooperate with and respect others by seeking understanding with all people, regardless of race, gender, or beliefs. I will demonstrate courage, standing up for what is right and speaking out against what is wrong. I will display confidence in all my actions without being arrogant. And it's so interesting because my father really was a confident man without being, he was humble. He was humble, but he got the job done. He took that action that was necessary. And under the E, he said, I will show empathy and consideration by advancing the values that are important to me and others. I will set a good example to others, taking responsibility for my actions. And I will acquire the best education within my capability. And then under the S, he wrote, I will be of service to others. And I will practice good sportsmanship in all my decisions, demonstrating fair play to all. And so, in this day and age when everybody's talking about character and having respect for others, all the values that my father wrote about back then make up what I would call good sportsmanship, because it takes into account the integrity and the action and all your abilities and your attitude about every single thing that you do in life.
Bernice, not only did that foundation gain national and international recognition, but it has done some incredible things, such as scholarships and things of that nature. Tell us just a little bit about that, if you will, please.
Well, my father started to go to schools when he was working with Investors Group. He was the first black person to be hired as a financial consultant with Investors Group. And when I finally joined him in the early 1980s, I had a desk right beside his. I would see him go off and take time to go to schools and to share his values around future races. And he'd ask, do I want to come? And I trailed off. I was definitely, you know, kind of interested. What's my dad up to here? And so I watched him in schools. He was an incredible orator. And he got many, many educators involved in the project. And eventually, we're now at a point where over 100,000 students every year benefit from the values of the Future Races Creed. And we have hundreds of schools that use the creed as their guideline for safe schools programs and anti-bullying programs and leadership programs. And in 1987, or is it 98? You know what? Now I've forgotten when our foundation started, but it was 27 years ago.
Okay.
My father kind of came to me and said, you know what? I want to have a foundation because I want to do scholarships as well as just talk to kids. And so I said, I'm in, and Mom said, she's in, and we all went to the lawyer and signed the papers, and we got this charity going, and now we've given out over $600,000 in scholarships, along with all of the incredible things that are being done in schools with our conferences and our presentations and our implementation sessions and our symposiums, and we have this wonderful team of people at the Herbert H. Carnegie Future Races Foundation who are carrying on this great work. I mean, our education director, Vivian Shapiro, oh my, she's one hot person who has taken all her educational skills as a principal in school, carried it over into Future Aces and had really opened up the doors of Future Aces to so many teachers to help them understand how do you apply these values. It's not just a piece of paper to put on the wall. It's something that you can actually use in your daily life, and that's the job of our education team at Future Aces.
Your Honor?
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a way a person can find that credo anywhere online?
Absolutely. All you have to do is go to www.futureaces.org and you will hit the website for our foundation, and there will be information in there about the services that our foundation provides for young people and for the community. And we now have a brand new executive director. I gave up my position in April, and this young lady, Tika Pinnock, is 40 years younger than I am and full of guts and zesto and zest, and she's coming in with her own new ideas. And what makes me so happy is that the foundation didn't die when I left, that there was so much meat there with our many wonderful staffers like Andrew and Amanda and Rochelle, who actually are making this happen. So I am so pleased.
I know they're all listening. And
that our work has not gone for naught.
I know they're all listening. Thank you for those props.
Well, you know what? I'm not there in the office all the time, but I'm constantly speaking on behalf of the foundation. I am a professional life enrichment speaker, and so I get to share this message with about 15,000 young people every year. So it's great. And one of the people that I've come across that has just kind of put a spark in for me is Kwame Mason, who is working on a film called Soul on Ice,
yes.
Past, Present,
yes.
and Future.
Yes.
And he was the last person to interview my father just before he died.
And your father was how old? We'll come back to that for a few minutes. But your father was how old when he passed?
92 years old.
92, okay. Yeah, we can go back to Kwame's film now. I think it's a good time to do that.
Aretha, I think it's worth her giving us that address one more time, just to make sure everybody gets it so they have an opportunity to go there and find that credo and look at the organization. Could you give it to us just one more time, Ms. Carnegie?
I would love to. It's www.futureaces.org.
And Bernice, I know
you
that
so
you
much.
And Kwame was on television up there yesterday morning or the day before. Talking
early.
About the development of that, talking about the development of that film, and Kwame sent, as you know, sent me an email and the trailer. I've seen the trailer before, so I just want to, first of all, I want to thank him for taking the initiative to do this film, and particularly include your dad. What else about that film can you tell us here before it's going to come out pretty soon now? But tell us a little bit more about that. It's a documentary, actually.
Well, it is a documentary, and right now Kwame's in the process of trying to find the financing.
Mm-hmm. Get it on.
He's barreling ahead, using his own initiative to make it happen. But it would be really nice if there were some people out there that believed in getting this story out that would want to connect and help him. On his way with this, because it is a story that's so worth telling, because, you know, it's sad that a lot of our Black history gets buried.
Yes.
And people, it just wasn't in our history books. And I didn't get any Black history until I was in grade 12. And guess what? It was all about the U.S. and slavery. So nothing was included about what was happening here in our own country. And I know they're trying to do better. They really are, and they've taken steps in different ways to make that happen. But it's still a struggle, and it's still a struggle for a wonderful young man like Kwame to do something like this, to take on an initiative that requires so much backing. So
do you have
you
any
hear
information?
This story, and you want to hear my father in the story. You want to help him.
Bernice, do you have any information on how people can maybe contact someone in initially to determine what they can really do? I know he needs donations and things of that sort. I saw that. But is there anything that you can tell folks of how they can reach him? Is there a website developed yet?
Yes, he does have a website. I'm probably sure that if you type in his name.
What's his name?
What his website is, you will probably find him.
It's Kate, so it's, spell his name out, and the name of the document is Soul on Ice.
Right. So it's Kwame, K-W-A-M-E, Damon, D-A-M-O-N, and his last name is Mason, M-A-S-O-N, and I'm sure that when you clue that into your computer, you'd probably be able to find him.
And then Soul on Ice should pop up. If so, then they can find him in that.
Probably, yes.
That way. Now, this, of course, doesn't have any great significance, Bernice, but your father was blind.
My father was blind for the last 25 years of his life.
Yeah, okay. Because, see, when I met him, he was blind. I want to touch up on one other thing that also is part of the history, but has nothing to do with the hockey. I believe it's your granddaughter that I met when I was up there, who was a member of the Canadian Mounted Police.
My niece. That's my niece, Tamu Bracken.
Oh, your niece. How about?
Yes, she's my sister
niece.
Rochelle's younger, her second daughter.
Oh, okay.
And she is with the RCMP and really enjoying that. And she hails in Nova Scotia right now.
Your Honor, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, I told Bernice that when in the 60s, I was able to get my hands on one of their training manuals. And I used that for exercise every day. the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and then to, you know, they didn't have any black ones, and then to see this young lady dressed as a Royal Canadian Police, it was just astounding to me. I took pictures with her and everything else. I was like a little kid. It was the first time I'd ever seen them. Okay, and then later on, in a couple of other visits up there, I ran into two or three other African Americans, but I doubt if there were that many, if there are that many left now. I know Bernice couldn't put her fingers on it, but I thought that was very interesting. I wanted to mention that, Bernice, because it's part of the history of African Americans' migration to Canada and becoming, you know, really making part of that country and society what it is today.
Well, I can go even a step farther on that. My daughter was a police officer with the Ontario Provincial Police, and she was the only black female officer at the time that she started.
When was
that? And the youngest officer they'd ever hired.
When was
and
that?
The going was pretty rough in terms of racism and sexism and all of that. But she was an outstanding officer. And what we are doing right now is we actually, my daughter Brooke and I, do workshops with police officers to help them be future ACEs. So we have a project called Future ACEs Positive Ticketing. And the concept is catching people in the act of having a positive attitude, or catching people in the act of cooperating with others. And the person actually gets a ticket. The police officer checks off why they're receiving it, writes a little note in the bottom, and we have corporations that are involved with the project who provide coupons that go in the ticket jacket so that the person receiving the ticket will also get a free hamburger or whatever it may be. And it's an amazing project. The officers, all officers with the York Region Police, as they're coming on to into their new services, Future ACEs does a three-hour workshop so they'll know about the values that are being used. And in addition to that, we work with another police force called Durham Regional Police Force, where we do presentations at schools. The officers come to those schools, give out the tickets while we're doing the presentations. It is so electrifying to see kids. And when the officers come back to the schools, the kids are all over them. And it's a happy situation.
Your Honor, I just want to say, Your Honor, why don't we stop for a minute and give an announcement of one of our community partners, and when we come back, you'd be prepared to pose one of your provocative questions.
I don't know about provocative.
We have community partners over here from time to time. We take time to mention them. We're only going to do one today in the interest of this incredible and outstanding information that we're receiving. This is A Journey to South Africa, since we're on the international tour here. A Journey to South Africa with the K-Trex Tours in conjunction with Javon Travel. It's October the 16th through the 26th in 2014, and it says experience Johannesburg, Cape Town, and luxury safari as you enjoy five-star hotels and restaurants. Truly a trip of a lifetime, they say. For additional information, contact Kat St. Thomas at area code 510-499-5909. We're now back to the National Roundtable with a guest whose father was the most famous and some say the best hockey player in Canada. He just happened to be black. And his daughter is on the show here with us today, Bernice Carnegie. Your Honor, I think you have a question.
Yeah, Ms. Carnegie, what is the Afro-American population in Canada these days? If you have...
If you're going to ask me for statistics on that, I can't give them to you. But what I can say is that Let me give you a comparison of when I was a child and now. I could travel down into from the suburbs down into Toronto and not see another black face on the street all the way down. Now, as you travel into Toronto, everywhere the populations here have totally changed. The schools that I work in, there are between 70 to 90 different cultures in many of those schools.
My goodness.
So it is quite amazing to see all of these young people of color, many of them of color, because a lot of the schools are like 70 to 80% kids of color. It's amazing how they all are learning to accept and respect each other. That's part of what we do, bring that into their schools. But it's there's just absolutely no comparison between when I was a kid.
I can say your mayor has certainly brought attention to you, Ontario.
Yes, he has. He has. And you know what? That just speaks to the fact that we must be very vigilant about what kind of leadership we want to portray for our young people. I know we're all human and we all make mistakes in our lives, and it's part of overcoming those mistakes and going on to be that better person. And hopefully some of the things that are happening to our mayor, he will manage to work through them so that he can be the role model that our children can respect.
He's certainly not right at this point, in my opinion, but that's just mine. Your Honor?
You said something earlier that piqued my interest, and that was that you didn't get any black history until you were a senior in high school, and that mostly dealt with the United States. Has anyone done a history of blacks who settled in Canada, let's say starting right after slavery in 1865, 1870, when they first migrated up that direction? Some didn't stop in New York or Boston. They kept going until they got to Halifax, up in that area. Is there any history?
Well, there were more places to stop than just in Halifax.
Okay.
And I know that the Ontario Black History Society with Rosemary Sadler is doing a lot of work to try to share some of that history. Our foundation would take some of our senior students on a character excursion that was headed by our leader, Amanda Fingerhut, and we would go into the Buxton and Chatham area, and where one of the stops on the Underground Railroad was, and we would do 5 hours of consciousness training along with visiting a number of the museums and sites there so that the kids of today could have a sense of what it was like to have crossed that border as a runaway slave and what they were facing when they eventually came to Canada. So there were many, many sites here in Ontario where the history is here, and we now have people that are writing books. Lawrence Hill has written a number of books, and others who are trying to get that word out.
Your Honor, our guest next week, believe it or not, very timely, is a genealogist from Halifax. That's our guest. So he's going to pick it up from here and take it to another level in terms of the museum. They have a huge, huge African-American museum there as well, by the way. Beautiful. And he's going to cover a lot of this next week as the genealogist on our show, Mr. Carver. So you definitely want to be back next week to hear that one. Hear what he has to say, because he's going to have a lot to say, and I'm eager to listen to him myself. Go ahead.
Today has been extremely important to me because I know very little about African Americans in Canada. I've been to Canada, but I know very little about it. But it was many years ago, probably back when you didn't see too many African Americans in Canada. I've been to Toronto and I've been to Montreal. Back in the 60s. And as you said earlier, Ms. Carnegie, I didn't see too many of us in the 60s, early 60s. I didn't see too many. I saw some, but not a lot.
But this three-part series, this three-part series that we're doing, Your Honor, is going to teach a lot of people about African Americans in Canada. Last week, as you know, we call it the Colored Hockey League with the Fosters.
Right.
And by the way, they send their regards, Bernice. And then today, of course, we have Bernice, and then next week we'll have Mr. Carvery on. And those three-part series, our listeners are going to learn an awful lot about Canada as you and I sit in and listen at the same time, Your Honor.
I'm learning a lot about it. And Ms. Carney, you are just wonderful to come in and give us this information, because I can assure you that we don't know about these things in the United States. Unfortunately, it's unfortunate, but we don't really know. We know about the railroad going up to Canada, but that's about all we know.
It is so important that we share this history. I know that when I was in school, my classmates had no idea about what was happening in the States with the racial issues. And so I was a teenager at the time of the race riots, and I did speak about it to my classmates because I did have that American background. And I was almost at the Martin Luther King March, and my parents stopped me from going because they thought I was going to get killed. But I was packed and ready. I was actually packed and ready to go. But my mother, she literally hit the ceiling when she found out that I was on my way down to the States. She was so frightened for me that they just changed my mind about how I would have to deal with racism. And I learned to deal with it one person at a time, trying to educate that one person at a time so that they would understand just the fact that black people and white people bleed the same.
Now, you've told me something else about Bernice. I'll say this, and our listeners now know the promise that we make that you will like to get information on this show you're not going to get anywhere else has been quite evident today, as well as most of our prior shows. And Bernice, we still have a couple of minutes to go, and I want to take a moment here. By the way, Your Honor, Denise will not be on today. Our school teacher will not be on. They have some really, really bad weather back there, and so she won't be on. But her professionalism has kept us on, because there was some thoughts and doubts about that early on. Bernice, we want to first of all thank you so much for coming on the show, taking the time out from your schedule to do that, and to bring the information that you've brought to our listeners around the globe, because this is important. It's not just African American history, not Canadian history, it's just history. And you've delivered today as promised. We cannot thank you enough. We're just indebted to you for doing that, okay?
Well, I thank you very much. I love the American connection, and I have to say that one of your great Americans, Gary Lucas, was the one who helped me revise my presentation so that the story of my father could be shared in such an impactful way. So Canada and the U.S., we are joined at the hip.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ms. Carnegie. We have enjoyed this, and I'm sure our listeners around the world have enjoyed it. And it's something that, as you said a few moments ago, we need to do more of this, because there's rich history in Canada that's connected with the United States, and you've done a fantastic job of giving us the information that we need to become better acquainted with our entire history, not just the United States portion of it, but with our entire history. So thank you so much for being here. We do appreciate it. And we want you to come back.
Well, it was a pleasure. I'd love to talk with you again. And hello to everybody out there. And please look up that creed and be a future ace.
And Bernice, don't forget, the show is archived, so you can pass it along to your Canadian friends and American friends, for that matter, and they can go to the computer and listen to it at any time. With that, I would like to say again, thank you very much, Denise, and I want them, and Denise, thank you very much, Bernice, and remind our listeners that next week again at the same time, 7 o'clock Eastern time, Mr. Theodore Carvery will be here as a genealogist. We're going to go finish our series on this in part three. And as we leave the show tonight, we remind you again, as we always do, if you can't be a good, if you can't play the game, be a good sport. Good night, world.
Good night, world. Good night.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.